because I lived in Japan for 13 years, and so when I go back, you know, for whatever reason, so when I'm in the U.S., people think I look Asian, but when I'm over in Japan, when I'm in Japan, they think that I'm American. So they, of course, do business, you know, we'll do business in English, but then they'll talk in Japanese, and they never know that I know exactly what they're saying. So it helps in negotiation.
Well, that's true.
Okay.
All right. Nothing.
So. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the second visit in Poland here.
It is.
Yeah?
It is, yeah.
And some changes. How long was the distance between first and the today?
Yeah, it's been about a year. Yeah. So we, you know, we launched in Poland and we had about 5 people. And then since then, we've grown to about 35 people.
Uh-huh.
And then we're going to hire another 200 over the next year. So.
Okay. So mainly good impressions after the year.
Yeah, except for this guy, maybe. No.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay. No, we love the culture in Poland, you know, because we hire lots of technical talent. About 70% is technical. So there's lots of great technical people in Poland.
Okay, so I have 3, maybe 4 simple questions.
Sure.
Only regarding business, because I think we have no time to discuss in IT or in tech about technology at all, because it's obviously it's not time for this. And the first general question is, where is added value of the business which is providing by Crossover?
Mm-hmm.
Because from my side, from first view, the first impression is that Crossover is a simple outsourcing company, let's say.
Sure.
Okay? But so, where is this the added value?
Sure.
Because if I'm looking for new people to hire for my project, I can say, okay, I will employ it myself or ask many companies to outsource the people, then paying only one shot, one invoice the monthly, or even the weekly, regarding American way.
Yeah.
And so, please tell us something.
Yeah, so so we are actually very different than outsourcers. Where if you think of your typical outsourcer, they are typically, you know, they'll have an office here in Poland and they'll hire a bunch of Polish people.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will work to go get U.S. customers. And then they will try to charge the customer as much as possible and then pay the people here as little as possible. And then they'll pocket the difference, right? And their people that they have to choose from is, you know, just in typically in Poland or maybe in one city in Poland.
Mm-hmm.
We are 100% the other way, where we are in 85 different countries. And we only source the best of the best talent, no matter where it is. So rather than being constrained to one location where the talent pool is very limited then, but if your talent pool is spread amongst 7 billion people, you can now get the best of the best from around the world. And what we do is we test everyone to make sure that they are the best, right? Where we have about 10,000 people a week apply to our various jobs. And therefore, what we can offer our customers is we assemble these teams of the best people from anywhere around the world. We then have very specific playbooks that they all run. And then we have a piece of software that helps those teams get better and better. And all 3 of those we offer at a 10% margin. So what we tell our customers is that we want to be open and transparent on exactly how much people are making. And therefore, if you want to pay someone $50 an hour, we will pay that person $50 an hour and hire them at $50 an hour. And then we charge 10% to the customer on top of that. So it's open, honest, transparent. And then therefore, we can actually pay the individuals much, much higher than your typical outsourcer who's trying to make, you know, 40, 50% margin.
Okay. What does it mean, the best of the best? Is it because globally we have not only high educated people, which are the best. So is it something also for the other not educated?
Yeah,
so really good.
Yeah, so we, so I like to think of it like this, where, and these guys are going to get sick of my analogies here, but so think of like the like a football team, right? We're in a stadium here, makes sense. So if you your Warsaw football team was only made up of people that were from Warsaw, it would maybe be good, but it wouldn't be as good as if you chose if you went against a Poland national team, right? And the Poland national team probably wouldn't be as good as if you assemble a team with the EU national team, right? So as you expand the number of people, you can get better and better and better talent. Now, you know, again, you have to test everyone to make sure that they are the best, because the way that people hire today is largely outdated, where people usually just look at resume and interview. And we think that those are very old tools. You know, resumes are about 500 years old, and Leonardo da Vinci actually came up with the resume. And interviews are about 14% effective, meaning that 86% of the time what you predicted is actually dead wrong. So we use those at the very end, and we test everyone to figure out what the skill sets are. Now, most of the jobs that we hire for are on the high skill side.
Most of them, right?
Where not all of them. I mean, some of the lower end roles are like, you know, support roles, or, you know, some of them, maybe some other marketing roles or something like that. But most of them, even those, we want to hire the best of even those lower skill roles.
Okay. In general presentations, in the internet, in the press, Crossover is described as, well, as a non-profit company. What does it mean, non-profit? Because companies, especially people, but companies work for the money. So where the money are, and what does it mean, non-profit?
Sure.
Because we're talking about the business hiring people and money.
Yeah, so so Crossover is actually a for-profit company. We have a social mission to, you know, kind of change the future of work and be able to provide jobs in places of the world that maybe couldn't have gotten those jobs before. But that is a for-profit company. The non-profit company I run is a non-profit version of Uber called Ride Austin. So that one is non-profit, but Crossover is for-profit.
It's two different companies.
Okay.
Yep.
But that's not the Uber is not an example of a non-profit.
No, but the, my company, my version of Uber is not non-profit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay, maybe something about Uber. So, what's your opinion about let's say sharing technology or sharing economy is to high point of view, but technology, let's say, because everything is going to the technology. Uber doesn't exist without without software.
Sure.
Say.
Yeah.
Because cars without software is nothing.
Yep.
So what's your opinion about the sharing?
Yeah.
Because we are in a specific place and then time in Poland now. It's something like a battle between traditional economy or traditional type of services and against to sharing. So
sure, yeah, so I'm a big believer in the sharing economy, or whatever you want to call it. And the reason that I believe that is significantly better than the traditional ways is really two reasons. One is that you have a better utilization of the asset.
Better what? I'm sorry?
Better utilization of the asset.
Lepsze wykorzystanie.
Right? Where, if you think about your typical car, cars actually are only used about 4% of the time. That means 96% of the time, it's doing nothing.
But
you're paying for the car, right? So you have all of these cars that are sitting around doing nothing, but they cost the economy lots of money, right? Because of depreciation, So
if you say it's my cost.
Yeah, exactly. It's your cost.
Right.
Yeah.
Or company's cost. Yeah.
Exactly right. So it's depreciation. So if you can have increase the utilization rate of those assets, it actually drives down the unit cost of for everyone. So even same deal with like Airbnb or any of these, you're sharing assets. And I believe that it will only continue, right? Think of, you know, even things like an electric screwdriver, right? Mm-hmm. I use my electric screwdriver maybe once every other month, yeah. Right? Not very often, maybe. Right? Maybe, right? So then, like, why do I have one? Like, it doesn't make any sense. I never use it, right? But I need to use it. But why do I even have one? Right, so it would make more sense if that was a sharing economy where
you're looking for your shelf, you're looking, oh, how many screwdrivers is a nice,
yeah,
it's very expensive, but what for?
But for what, right? Exactly, right? So you can envision a world in the future where you have an app and a drone comes and drops it off, you know, at your porch, and you pick it up and you use it, and you know, you get charged for 5 minutes, and then you hit the button and it goes again, right? And that is cheaper for me as a user, but that's just better for the economy as a whole because you're using assets better. So okay. So that's why I'm a huge believer in the sharing economy.
That's asset point of view.
Mm-hmm.
What about producer point of view? I'm a screwdriver producer. Sure. You know, we have a big problem because we have a big stock. What can we do? We're selling day by day. We're pressing our sales forces. The sales managers, you know, listen, you have only 1 month, then if things will look like today,
sure,
you will have fired.
Sure.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's kind of the second point is that many people think that in the sharing world, you would have less of that would be needed. But it's actually the other way around, where if it's cheaper to use, more people will use it. So therefore, you actually end up needing more of it because you actually increase the total need, right? Because there's a screwdriver example is a good example, right? Where I may not be able to afford the electric screwdriver because I don't want to go and pay $200 for it because I can't, right? But if it costs me, you know, $5 to use, I'll use it, right? So you increase your total number of users, and therefore the total number of that asset that you need actually goes up over time because it's cheaper to on a per unit basis to use.
Okay. Okay. You cannot say about something about figures. Income. that's a typical question, but the answer is typical. If you have typical answer, please do not.
for crossover? So we, I guess what numbers?
Okay, for crossover, not globally, in Poland, because we are in Warsaw, so that's the point of...
Yeah, so... Yeah, well, so, well, for... well, figures for... So we have... 35 people that work for 35 people that work for you know, crossover in our companies today, and then we're going to be hiring
in Poland,
and then we're going to be hiring another 200 in Poland over the next year, right? So and most of these jobs are, I guess, what is the average salary or average wage here?
It's around $78,000.
Sure. So
monthly.
Yeah.
Yearly.
Yeah. Something with my heart.
Yeah. So you know, we, because we're hiring the best, mm-hmm. and
okay.
That's obvious. We pay well.
And what kind of industry you are targeting?
Yeah. So most of our customers today are U.S. customers. And,
U.S. customers in Poland, which have the business in Poland, yeah?
No. Actually, most of our companies are technology companies,
mm-hmm.
that are based in the U.S. that use pull in teams to help develop their products. And about 70% are technical roles, and then the other 30% are non-technical roles.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So mostly technical.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Globally, we currently have 2,000 staff members.
2,000 globally, yeah?
Yeah, 2,000 globally, and it's about 85 different countries we're in.
85 countries, 85. Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. And have you, from, again, crossover point of view, have you any expectations from administration side in Poland? Because we are in a specific situation, no jokes, we have a change. Independently, you think bad or good, it doesn't mean, but we have a new government and we have new administration, so has crossover some expectations, like regarding law, regarding regulations especially.
Yeah, no, I think that Poland in particular, when you take a look at the EU, has been very business friendly, right?
Friendly
as a whole, right? Mm-hmm. You know, both the old administration as well as the new administration at least are talking in terms of business friendly.
Okay.
And I believe that if the Polish government continues to be more business friendly, that helps the economy as a whole, because it's those that try to protect old industries that ends up not being good for companies like crossover.
Okay, so what kind of European Union you can compare to Poland now?
Well, yeah, so there are other countries like say France that
France
is kind of the opposite, right? Where with France, you know, the labor laws are very different.
Especially the labor law, I think, is absolutely different.
It is, right? And we think that is restrictive on the growth of economies when you put too much government regulations or too many labor laws in place.
Okay, so thanks.
All right, great.
I'm quite happy, thank you.
Okay.